It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with IPR state government reporter Katarina Sestarik at the State House Law Library. Legislative Mondays during the sessions, we like to focus on one or two issues that are being debated at our State House to see what our lawmakers have to say about them, to see what you have to say about them, and talk to people who would really be affected by our changed laws. Coming up in a little bit, we'll be focusing on medical marijuana debate at the State House. We've had some medical marijuana laws changing over the last few years. We'll talk about the latest proposed changes in just a few minutes. But before that, Katarina, we're going to be talking about something called it's been dubbed the Personhood Bill. I don't know if that's in its official title, a measure approved by the Senate GOP. Tell us about it before we meet our lawmakers to discuss it.
The bill increases the sentence for people who are convicted of causing the death of an unborn person, that's the language in the bill, without consent from the mother. For example, if someone assaults a pregnant woman and then she has a miscarriage, they'd get a higher criminal penalty. That aspect wasn't particularly controversial, but then Republicans amended it to include what Democrats say is an attempt to establish personhood for a fetus in Iowa law, because it defines an unborn person as a human from fertilization onward. And so now this bill goes to the House. It would need to pass a committee by the end of this week to remain eligible after this upcoming funnel week deadline. And the House will consider this bill this afternoon for the first time.
Joining us to talk for a few minutes about it, Senator Jake Chapman, a Republican from Adel. Senator Chapman, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us, Senator Janet Peterson, a Democrat. Joining us, a Democrat from Beaverdale in Des Moines County. Welcome to you, Janet Peterson.
Thanks for having me.
Jake Chapman, you're behind this bill. Why do we need this now, this so-called personhood bill?
Well, it's really a fetal homicide bill. And as described, what this bill in particular does is it recognizes the dignity of that child in the womb, that when there is a forcible felony, domestic assault, murder, those type of things, that the criminal penalty mirrors that of a person living outside of the womb. Now, obviously, there's been some controversy over putting personhood or defining personhood within this bill. But I think it's important that we start talking about who that person is. That's the whole goal of this bill, is to recognize that that is a person, and therefore they should have rights. And when someone murders that child, whether in a drunk driving accident or through murder, that person is held to a level of penalty, again, that mirrors killing any other human being. And so I felt it was only proper to ensure that personhood be put into this bill, defining that for the purpose of this code chapter, that life begins at conception, and at any point in time following conception through live birth, that if one of these assaults occurs on them, that the penalty is just.
Janet Peterson, would you like to respond?
Well, when the bill came out of committee, it was a bipartisan bill because it originally increased penalties for people who knowingly terminated a pregnancy while committing a felony. And what we saw happen on the Senate floor is what I would dub a bait and switch, where they changed the complete intent of the bill to convert it into a personhood bill, and not give the public adequate time to make their voice heard on the issue of personhood, which could have dramatic impacts on everything from a woman's ability to access common forms of birth control to families who are interested in pursuing in vitro fertilization or surrogacy using in vitro. All of those issues may now come into question under this legislation, and I believe it deserves the public deserves a chance to weigh in on it and shouldn't do a bait and switch on the Senate floor.
Senator Chapman, what do you say to those concerns that it could affect, Senator Peterson says it could affect IVF, birth control, Planned Parenthood says it could affect abortion and make abortion illegal. I realize there are some parts of the bill that say this only comes into effect without the consent from the mother, but there are some parts that don't say that. So, I mean, would this bill affect abortion and birth control?
So first of all, I think it's important that we recognize that this is existing law, that we're enhancing existing law. And Senator Peterson is reciting the talking points of Planned Parenthood, which they themselves backed off of. In fact, in their interview with WHO-TV, they said that this problem lies inserting language into the code, so the specific bill does not bring us to a ban on abortion right away. I get the concern by those on the other side of the aisle that when you place personhood, when you recognize that that is a person in the womb, that that could lead to other legislation dealing with abortion. But this is fetal homicide. We're talking about very grotesque situations, situations in which a mother is murdered at 8 months, 8.5 months, and it is only proper that that individual, that perpetrator, be charged with a crime similar to that of a living human being outside of the womb. And so that is absolutely not what this bill does. And as I pointed out, Planned Parenthood even backed off of that original claim.
And what about the issues with, I mean, how would the bill handle prosecuting people who couldn't see that the woman was pregnant, whether, you know, she wasn't visibly pregnant, or you mentioned a drunk driving situation that the driver couldn't see, doesn't know that the woman is pregnant when that's happening. So, what happens then?
Yeah, we heard that that same argument on the floor from Senator Hoag. It's absolutely absurd, as though a drunk driver is choosing who they're going to hit and kill. A drunk driver doesn't pick whether they kill one person in a vehicle or hit a minivan full of, you know, seven family members. It's really a ludicrous argument. The reality is, the crime is that a life was taken, and it was because of reckless activity, including, in this case, drunk driving. And so, again, that individual whose life was taken, there needs to be justice for that. And so, again, I think that claim is just really absurd.
Senator Peterson, do you have a response to that?
Well, what I would say is the legislation that Senator Chapman and his colleagues voted for on the Republican Party last week is once again another unconstitutional extreme measure. And what I would like to see us working on are issues where we can come to bipartisan consensus on. Over in less than the past 3 years, we've seen a double the amount of maternal mortality in our state. We've had 31 labor and delivery departments close across our state. We've seen more maternal mortality or morbidity also on the rise. And we have some women in our state wanting to have healthy babies, having to drive as far as 2.5 hours to get to a hospital or a healthcare provider to assist them in delivering their baby. And I believe that if we could work on bills that aren't unconstitutional and extreme, we could actually move our state forward in having, making our state a safer place to actually have a baby.
Could I just ask you to further explain why you think this would affect medical procedures like IVF?
Because they are saying the way they define personhood from the time the sperm meets the egg, that is considered a person. So it could have it could impact several different reproductive health care situations.
Senator Chapman, I'd like to ask you, because a lot of the changes, as you well know, in law in states at the federal level are based in real-life situations where, had this law been there, that things might have been different. What case or cases can you point to where, if we had this law, it would have been different or beneficial or made a difference in any way? A real-life case. We've been talking theoretical up to this point. I'd like you to root it in what you see happening out there or cases that we've had in our courts.
Sure. There's a number of cases. Samuel Cornett in Kentucky killed his pregnant girlfriend, was charged with fetal homicide. Aaron Trejo, his girlfriend was 6 months pregnant, was charged with fetal homicide. But the real-life case occurring today is Chris Watts, who killed his 15-week pregnant wife and their 4-year-old and 3-year-old daughter. And in their state, they do not have fetal homicide, and therefore he is not being charged with fetal homicide. I take exception to Senator Peterson's comments that this is somehow extreme. When 38 states have passed fetal homicide, 29 of those states are from the moment of conception. We're talking about places like Minnesota, Massachusetts. These are not conservative states that have this type of language. And so what's extreme is when you have someone like Charles Manson, who has 4 of his cult members go in and kill Sharon Tate, who is 8.5 months pregnant, and kill that child, and for us to not have statutes that protect the innocent life and charge that individual with murder, I think that's extreme.
Do you have a response, Senator Peterson?
Well, I think it's outrageous that he continues to cite cases that are in our state where we've lost 49 women in less than 3 years who have died from maternal mortality. We had more than 40 women lose their uterus giving birth at University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. We have a perfect storm brewing and maternal health care crisis in our state with the number of physicians retiring. We're 50 out of 50 in terms of OBGYNs in the country. We also have a Medicaid privatization program, which has been an absolute disaster, causing rural hospitals and even our larger hospitals to lose money for labor and delivery services. And that is causing not only a problem with pregnant women on Medicaid, but also pregnant women throughout our state who also rely on having access to adequate health care. And I believe we need to quit having the GOP ignore maternal health issues to focus on extreme unconstitutional amendments, and need to get back to looking at ways they can help women, whether it's pregnancy accommodation that's at work, allowing them to have choice of doctor when they're pregnant at work, for workers' compensation. Paid family leave would also be helpful, and maybe doing something to improve the number of health care providers that we have in our state that can help women get access to health care. Senator Chapman, along with his colleagues, also banned thousands of Iowa women from going to Unity Point and University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, health care providers, for their family planning services. And I think that is outrageous. So we need to do more to support women and not jeopardize their health care.
I wonder, as we finish up this conversation, if it sounds like there would be any room for compromise. Jake Chapman, you've heard the concerns of Janet Peterson, undoubtedly other Democrats. Do you see a rewording here anyway? You are in the majority in both chambers. It's nice to have a bipartisan bill. What do you see as possible areas of compromise?
Well, I think the one thing that we've heard is that this is somehow going to jeopardize abortion. We just heard for several minutes about a lot of issues that have nothing to do with fetal homicide, issues that I'm willing to work with Senator Peterson on. But when we're talking about fetal homicide, we've heard the argument about abortion. And if we need to provide clarity that in no way does this jeopardize abortion, though I am staunchly pro-life, this bill does nothing in regards to abortion, though I would like to continue that debate on the issue of life. We're talking about fetal homicide, and so perhaps if the senator from the other side of the aisle feels that that is necessary to see this bill passed, then I'm more than willing to have that conversation. But in its current form, as I pointed out, 38 states already have similar language, and I think it's only proper that Iowa become the 39th state.
Senator Chapman, the Senate had considered a personhood bill earlier this session. It did not advance after a subcommittee, and there were some other abortion-related bills that didn't advance. Is this essentially a last-ditch attempt to get whatever you can regarding personhood, maybe not, and or abortion, through a funnel deadline?
Not at all. Again, this has nothing to do with abortion. We're talking about violent crimes being committed, felony crimes, forcible felonies. Has nothing to do with abortion. It has everything to do with non-consensual murder of that child. And so, of course, I'd like to see pro-life legislation move forward. I have also introduced the constitutional amendment, making clear that there is no right to an abortion under Iowa's Constitution, but that's not what this bill deals with. This is a common sense approach to protecting the most innocent amongst us in non-consensual murder.
I want to thank you very much for this discussion, Senator Jake Chapman and Senator Janet Peterson, for coming into the State House Law Library with me and Katarina Sestaric. And we appreciate you sharing your views on this new bill that defines a fetus as an unborn person, a personhood bill approved by the Senate GOP in the last few days. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. I want to remind you about tomorrow's program. While we switch over our guests at the State House Law Library. On Wednesday's a big day, historically, in terms of Iowa, the Varnum decision. Has it been 10 years already? Yes, it has. This historic unanimous ruling by the Iowa Supreme Court that won the right for same-sex couples to marry here in Iowa. That took place nearly 10 years ago on Wednesday. Tomorrow on this program, on the eve of that 10th anniversary, we're going to look back at April of 2009, what the decision meant, why it was decided the way it was. And it made Iowa only the third state to legalize same-sex marriage after Massachusetts and Connecticut. We'd like to ask you, how are you looking back on the 10-year anniversary of Varnum? Did it change your life? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Actually, email us. That's tomorrow's program, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Note the telephone number so you can call in tomorrow as well. Let's talk about medical marijuana. Now, when Iowa legalized medical marijuana just a few years ago, it allowed no manufacturing and was limited to epilepsy patients. Well, now it's expanded to allow the manufacturing here in the state of oils, tablets, creams. Our current medical marijuana program that was launched in 2018 offers sales of these things containing up to 3% THC. This is to patients with qualifying health problems. Now, the potency of some medical marijuana products here in Iowa could be increasing under a current bill. Tell us a little bit about it, Katarina Sestaric.
Right. So with the current medical marijuana law, the current program has really only been going for a few months. Dispensaries first opened on December 1st of last year. So there are some in the legislature who have said, you know, we need to wait and see how this is going. That's what they were saying last year, at least. And this year, the House of Representatives voted 96-3 for a slight expansion of the medical marijuana program. Under the current law, there's a 3% cap on THC in medical marijuana products. That's the chemical that makes people high. Mm-hmm. And some supporters of medical marijuana say that that's not potent enough to relieve medical conditions, or maybe a person has to take 10 pills to get the amount they need rather than one pill if a more potent amount of THC was allowed. So this addresses that by removing the 3% cap and changing it to a limit per patient of 25 grams of THC each month. Every 90 days, mm-hmm. 25 grams of THC every 90 days. And that would allow medical marijuana manufacturers to potentially make more potent products than what's available right now. This bill also allows physician assistants and nurse practitioners to certify patients and does a couple of other things as well.
Mm-hmm. We have about 4 minutes before we have to take a break. We'll come back in the second half hour to discuss this further. But let's hear some opening opinions from our lawmakers in the State House Law Library. Representative Jared Klein is with us, a Republican from Kyoto. Representative John Forbes, a Democrat from Urbandale, a pharmacist, noteworthy there. Also, Senator Thomas Green, Republican of Burlington, a retired pharmacist. Welcome to you all. Let's start with Jared Klein, Representative Klein. What is your view on what needs to be sort of ironed out in this advancement of medical marijuana laws here in Iowa?
Well, the bill has had a lot of attention on the THC content and so on and so forth, and I'm more than happy to talk about that. But there's some other important pieces of this bill, and this came from conversations with members of the board, with the public, with other legislators to come out with some reasonable steps that we need to address. This isn't an issue that will ever stop, that will ever go away. We need to continue to look at it, continue addressing it. So aspects of this bill include allowing pharmacists and pharmacists, Texas, to be in the dispensaries to make sure that they're getting professional advice and opinions, by allowing nurse practitioners and physician assistants to recommend this product to their patients, because we have a real shortage in rural Iowa of doctors. These are some other aspects of the bill, I think, that continually get kind of left out because all the focus is on this THC cap that we've addressed. In conversations with members of the board, we definitely did identify, and this is already happening, the challenge of trying to measure and make sure there's compliance when we're dealing with the percent THC level, because there are products out there that now have 20 milligrams of THC in them and still are falling within that 3% limit. So that 20 milligrams is important because they tell us that is where the psychoactive effects start to take in. So what we tried to do is figure out a way to make sure this couldn't be abused, because today, make no mistake, under the current law, there is no cap, because there is a product out there that can get you 20 milligrams of THC and be within 3%, but there's no limit on how much of that you can buy. So today, there is no hard cap. What we did was put a hard cap of how many milligrams you can have, which is done by weight, and you can't game the system, because you can take almost a 700 milligram capsule filled with mostly inert material and put in 20% or 20 milligrams of THC to still get that out there. And that's exactly what's happening.
Okay, Representative Klein, we're coming up on a break. I wanted to give your colleague, Representative John Forbes, a chance to chime in with his initial thoughts, and we'll be back in the second half hour to go more in depth. John Forbes.
Okay, thank you.
We have less than a minute, so,
okay.
So you can expand on the ideas, but what points do you want to make?
Well, I think in the bill that we passed, one of the things that we ran into is patient access to healthcare providers that would make the recommendation to allow them to receive medical cannabis. And so this bill also addresses physician's assistants and also nurse practitioners, so they can make the recommendation. As a practicing pharmacist, I get confronted by patients on, they go to their physician and they won't prescribe it for them, or they won't recommend it. And so I think expanding it to nurse practitioners and physician assistants will allow more healthcare professionals the opportunity to be able to bring this product to their patient.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there for now. We'll come back after a short break with Representative John Forbes, Representative Jared Klein, and Senator Thomas Green. We'll hear from the senator in just a moment. Also, we'll hear some personal stories. We want to hear from you. Has medical marijuana helped you with a medical condition? Are you registered to buy medical marijuana here in Iowa for your condition? Has it been effective, or do you go elsewhere? We are talking about many aspects of this new medical marijuana law. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestarik. We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with IPR's state government reporter Katarina Sestarik at the State House Law Library, talking about a couple of things being debated in Des Moines at the State House. This half hour, we want to talk about medical marijuana laws, how they may be changing with several lawmakers, Representatives Jared Klein and John Forbes, along with Senator Thomas Green. We'd like to hear from you. Has medical marijuana helped you with a medical condition? Are you registered to buy medical marijuana for your condition in this state? Has it been effective? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Katarina, remind us quickly, for those who may have just joined us, what is being discussed or in this bill, the facets of change?
So the Senate is now considering a bill that was passed in the House last week, 96-3, that make some changes to Iowa's medical marijuana program. It allows physician assistants and nurse practitioners to certify patients for the program. It removes a ban on some people with certain felony charges applying for the program. It also addresses the 3% cap on THC by changing it to a limit per patient of 25 grams of THC every 90 days.
We started to hear some of the opening opinions of our lawmakers. Let's go back to a lawmaker we didn't hear from, Senator Thomas Green, a Republican from Burlington, also a retired pharmacist I have in my notes. Senator Green, give us your thoughts on the various changes here, what you see as most important.
Well, this is a very positive step moving forward. You know, there's roughly 3.2 million Iowans, and I think through the program we've identified roughly 18 to 20,000 Iowans with debilitating medical conditions that have not been helped by traditional pharmacy. So this is just an option to help those patients. I think these are, you know, way overdue, long needed, and it's just positive steps for Iowans with, like I said, those debilitating conditions. You know, Representative Forbes and I have been in the pharmacy business for, well, I myself, 45 years. And we've always been patient advocates. We've always tried to do what is best for our patients, to provide them relief, provide them options with their varying medical conditions. This is just something that has come forward in the last few years, and I think it's well intended. It's long overdue, and I think it offers a very good promise for the future for these patients with debilitating medical conditions.
Also joining us this half hour, Jason Karimi is Executive Director of Iowa Patients for Medical Marijuana. Welcome to you, Jason.
Thank you. Can you guys hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay,
loud
perfect.
And clear. We want to mention, too, that you run something called Weed Press WordPress, which describes itself as Iowa's number one source for marijuana law reform efforts. Before we get to your opinion on it, tell us a little bit about your backstory. You have a medical condition where you felt marijuana helped. Your backstory, a little bit about that and why you're so passionate about change on the medical marijuana front.
Sure. Well, I'm one of 14 patients that Iowans for Safe Access filmed for TV commercials a little over a year ago. So my story is well known. I try not to focus on it because people will attack people with mental illness, but I am diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I've been attacked by other marijuana advocates this session very harshly for that, and it's made me realize we do need to talk about mental illness and have mental health advocates at the State House more vocal about this issue for other Iowans. The show started with a couple very controversial issues. I want to speak to Representative Jeff Shipley's point during discussion on this House file. This isn't a very controversial issue anymore. It's kind of changing, and people, even our, it looks like some of our legislators are ahead of the curve on this because it was a nearly unanimous vote at the House. So it seems like everyone's on the same page. We are going to be moving forward and taking this seriously. And as someone with bipolar disorder, all I can do is advocate. I'm not a doctor. I don't have those credentials. I can't tell people whether or not they should use marijuana. But I have found for myself that every time I go see doctors, they volunteer on their own, that for someone in my, multiple times they volunteered on their own, that someone like me is not going to work well with normal pharmaceuticals. I'm a referee. I was a top-level referee. I refereed the Des Moines Menace, NCAA soccer. I couldn't do that when I was taking pharmaceuticals, which for my disorder have side effects like weight gain, inability to function and focus, and I need to function at the highest possible level in the professional circuit. Smoked marijuana is the cheapest and most effective form for myself to medically benefit from the components of this entire plant. And while we feel frustrated as advocates that we're not being listened to or even ignored at the State House, that has seemed to have changed quite drastically this year. So I'm very grateful for that and also very nervous about where the discussion is going to go because of all the miscommunications, misreportings by media and everyone, because the complexity of this issue is not easily summarized.
Okay, Jason Karimi, let's go back to our lawmakers. Representative Forbes, there you hear an advocate wanting, by his words, to go far beyond what is being suggested as changes here in Iowa. What's your view on that view?
Well, I know there's a bill in Senate. Senator Joel Bochum has a bill that would bring in the full plant. At this time, I don't think there's enough support in either chamber to get it on the floor for a vote, either in the House or Senate. Personally, I don't think, as a lawmaker, I don't think Iowa's ready right now to move to a more recreational type use of cannabis. Some states do allow, a few do allow the smoked version. And we've had discussions about that in committees and in our caucus. But right now, I don't think we're there to be able to pass legislation that would allow for people to access medical cannabis through the smoked version.
Representative Klein, I do want to ask you, when you spoke about this on the House floor, you said that this was part of working with the advisory board that was put into place to handle decisions about medical marijuana, to make recommendations to the lawmakers. You said these recommendations came from them and that you want to continue working with the board and following their advice. But then a member of that board quit. This news came out on late Friday. Saying that the board's decision to not raise the 3% THC cap was misrepresented. Can you explain why then you said that this was following the board's recommendations?
I've always been very clear. This is based on discussions with members of the board, not the board as a whole. Some of this stuff was dealt with as a board, that when you talk about the PAs and nurse practitioners, that was, I believe, something they did vote on. What they voted is to maintain the cap, but the 3% cap. But in discussions with them, and I believe they, even those that were there, were acknowledging this, we recognize the challenge of meeting compliance when we're basing it on a percentage basis and not on a weight basis. So we had that discussion. But at the end of that meeting, we had not landed on an exact gram amount. So what we did was we went, Department of Public Health was there as well. They went to get language drafted. They are the liaison or the overseer of the board. Department of Public Health came to us with a much higher proposal than where we ended at 20 grams. I believe it was a 90-gram level. They came back to 45, and finally we ended up comfortable at the 20-gram level, and that was to make sure that people aren't abusing this, but that there's enough available to provide treatment. In the end, we compromised to 25-gram level. Again, through the whole process, this went through subcommittee, through committee, sat on the calendar. All I heard from was for people that wanted to increase above 20 grams. There was plenty of an ample opportunity for members to reach out in the medical community, not just board members, but members of the medical community to reach out and say, we think this is going too far. This is going beyond. Instead, we never heard that. We only heard from the medical community. We only heard those from outside that wanted to go up, but we held to what we believe was a reasonable and responsible approach, taking input from the members of the board, the public, other folks in the medical profession, pharmacists such as are sitting on either side of me here today, to come out with a good piece of legislation that in the end had, I think, the most votes any bill like this has ever had to pass out of the House. So I think it just shows that we work together. I think there's a lot of misinformation in that article that was printed. I've been very clear. This was a conversation with members of the board. What were their concerns? What are things we need to be doing, looking at? Because we have to try to stay ahead of this. So that percentage, switching to grams, we were trying to get a like-for-like change so that we weren't allowing it to be abused, because there is no cap today. You can get unlimited amount of THC. What we did was put a hard cap based on weight.
Jason Karimi, can I hear from you? We have concerns there about possible abuse. I believe you believe that the THC should not be capped legally whatsoever. How do you answer the concerns that the lawmakers have about abuse and wanting the cap?
I currently don't seem to be able to answer it because it seems like we're being blatantly ignored. I just said that I, as a patient advocate and other patient advocates, need smoked marijuana for the purpose of cost effectiveness. And then with respect, it seemed that it was interpreted as I was advocating for recreational use. I'm personally opposed to recreational use. I think it's against biblical beliefs. I don't think there's any benefit to that. Smoked and psychoactive marijuana helps mental illness. So putting caps on THC doesn't help me. It's not potent enough for what I need. You can give me Adderall, which makes me feel like I'm on methamphetamine, mm-hmm. because it is. That's not too dangerous, but I want a less harmful version, and it's equated with heroin. So I don't like being ignored. And I think lots of patient advocates in the state feel like what we are asking for is absolutely ignored. And that's, I understand the political
I'm asking, Jason Karimi, I'm asking sure. you with respect, in other words, to tell us how you would craft legislation with a person with to meet the various conditions and help?
I think it's impossible. I think the legislators have an impossible task. No legislation you craft will be perfect. All this legislation seems to be violating basic principles of limited government. I don't think you can craft a perfect controlled mechanism for something that is holistic at its nature. It's not like our Western medical model. We normally don't use cocaine. We normally don't use opium. This is a very unique thing, and it's almost a translation issue. I don't think it can be translated easily. So I think it's going to be a matter of a cultural and value change where we accept what people are telling us, which is that they find alternative relief with this alternative substance. It's definitely alternative medicine. There is no legislation you can craft on a pharmaceutical model that's going to satisfy every single patient. And my main concern is while the limitations and concern about abuse is very much on point, I'm afraid doctors are going to be advocating to patients quietly to break the law in their extreme circumstances. At 25 milligram limit, let's say you have cancer and excessive amounts of pain and you need 26 grams, you're putting doctors in a position where what's the lesser harm? And with that Hippocratic Oath and all that kind of stuff that you guys are experts on, I don't know what to do. I genuinely have to tip my hat to you guys on the work you're doing here because of the impossibility of designing a program in this manner. I don't know the answer to that question.
Jason, Jason had mentioned earlier an amendment that was brought up on the House floor by Republican Representative Jeff Shipley. He then withdrew the amendment, but it would have added many more qualifying conditions to the medical marijuana program, allowed basically any form of marijuana for use by patients in the state program under supervision of their doctor. Representative Forbes, I'm curious what you thought of that from a pharmacist's perspective. I know you've advocated for lifting the cap that's even in this bill even higher. Do you think going in that direction would be a good thing? Would you have voted for something like that?
Well, when we had our discussions with Representative Klein, I was advocating for a 30 gram per 90 day cap, and we compromised down to 25, and that's doable for most Iowans. That's equivalent to 277 milligrams per day of THC, which covers the vast majority of patients. But there are patients that fall outside those parameters, and we wanted to make sure that we could take care of patients in all different types of medical conditions that are in the current bill. Now, from the medical condition side, I would like to see us expand the number of conditions that are covered. And the Senate does a much better job, I think, of allowing physicians to make the determination on which patient gets the best medication. Many medications today aren't effective. And in a case in opioids, we're seeing opioids being prescribed, although we're seeing lower numbers today, where patients could benefit when they could use in combination opioid with a medical cannabis product to reduce their opioid dose. Mm-hmm.
Senator Green, can you talk a bit about, I know the Senate has been much more open to expanding the medical marijuana program than the House has. Last year, you expressed frustration on the Senate floor that the House wasn't coming along with the Senate on this issue. Where do you stand on that now?
My first year here was 2017, and we passed the compassionate use of medical cannabis 45-5 on the Senate side. The previous year, when it was first implemented with the 3% cap, et cetera, you know, it was 26-24. So I appreciated the rest of the Senate moving along the lines of public sentiment and medical need and medical demand for this. So I am a little bit frustrated. You know, sometimes when we send over to the House with good intentions and vice versa, it goes both ways, believe me. You know, I do get a little frustrated with that, but that's how the process works up here. It is a compromise. It is working together, and it's finding that common ground that will benefit those 20,000 Iowans who need and could use and could benefit with medical cannabis. If this was your daughter or your son or your sister or your brother or your mother who had one of these debilitating conditions, we'd do everything possibly that we could to help them. And that's what we're really trying to do, is to help those people who truly need another option for their help.
About 5 minutes left of our conversation on medical marijuana, possible changes coming to Iowa law. I wonder if this aspect of marijuana, but we have 50 U.S. states with a patchwork of different laws concerning marijuana. Of course, several states have legalized it for recreational use, and many more states are dealing with it in terms of medical marijuana, as Iowa is. I want to ask our lawmakers, and perhaps also Jason Karimi, how does that complicate the picture when marijuana is not legal in a federal sense? What do you have to think of in terms of making law, or do you have to accommodate that at all? Jared Klein.
Well, I think that the reason we're doing this is because, quite frankly, the federal government has been failing in their duty for a number of years on this, and it's left it to the states. And those of us that face these patients on a regular basis, we work with the patients, we work with the medical community. I know from the House side that my caucus always wants to have as much data as they can before making a decision, and a lot of times they want to hear from the medical community. But in actuality, this has been a complete failure of our federal government. Both parties have really dropped the ball on this. I'm disgusted that we have people that go to other states, Mayo Clinic, for example, that cannot work with that state very well on this program because, quite frankly, the federal government has been derelict in their duty.
John Forbes, do you see a time when the federal government, anytime soon, any indications that the federal government will put this all under one umbrella and not leave it up to the states?
Well, that would be the best case scenario. Right now, marijuana is considered a class one or schedule one type drug, which is in the same class as heroin, which is considered illegal substances. And that's the big barrier right now. We are basically violating federal law when we pass medical cannabis laws here in the state of Iowa. I think the federal government needs to sit down. I've had a couple times discussions with Senator Charles Grassley about rescheduling marijuana here in our country. I think they're starting to open their eyes a little more, bit more now. And hopefully the next 1 to 5 years, we'll see something moving that would then make it accessible to patients across our country. And in that, and if that would happen, then drug companies would be able to then start manufacturing and producing medical cannabis products, and probably under a more stringent type processing, which would go under the FDA.
Representative Forbes, to follow up on that, the Iowa Peace Officers Association is registered against this legislation. They were saying today that they're concerned about the 25-gram cap, that it's they think it's too high and would allow marijuana products that they consider to be too potent. What's your response to that?
Well, like I said before, it gives patients more dosing options. When people start out on these products, they're starting at low doses. But as they use the product, they're going to need higher doses because they build up a tolerance. And so this bill gives more dosing options and allows patients and physicians to make those best choices.
Just a couple minutes left of our conversation. I'd like to wrap up by having our lawmakers tell us, what is your forecast for the changed laws here? It sounds like there's a number of wrinkles that need to be ironed out, but there is some bipartisan consensus here. Jared Klein, do you see a bill coming out here for sure?
Well, we're going to have conversations with the Senate. The House has done its job. We'll see what the Senate comes back with new developments that have happened in the last few days. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that we can find a compromise and get a good piece of legislation out for the people of Iowa.
To make this second funnel week, we have a funnel at the end of the week. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Jason Karimi, I don't know. Are you registered to receive medical marijuana through Iowa at this point, or does that not serve your purposes?
Not currently, because the current restrictions, the arbitrary restrictions on the program, are too expensive for me to afford. It's not cost effective. Many patients I've had reported to us at Iowa Patients say they can't afford the program even though they have a medical card. So the program's simply not cost effective. For that reason, I haven't bothered to sign up and spend the fee.
Mm-hmm. Final words from either Senator Green, your forecast for this issue in the State House?
I think it'll move this year. I feel positive. You know, like I said, the House has sent us a bill to work with. I haven't seen it yet, but I will review it. And I think it's good legislation when we have a pharmacist in the House and a pharmacist in the Senate. John and I have worked together on many issues over the last 3 years. And this is another one that will benefit, like I said, up to 20,000 Iowans who are really hampered and hindered in their quality of life. So we're going to move forward on this.
Okay. Representative Forbes, you feel as well?
Well, I'm hopeful that before we adjourn here in the next 30 to 45 days, we'll have a bill out of here that'll be meaningful for people here in the state of Iowa and help these very debilitating diseases that people aren't being treated with now with conventional medications.
Well, thank you for the conversation. Before we go, Katarina, remind our listeners who might not know, what is this second funnel week all about?
So this is a key state house deadline for most legislation to be first, if it's passed by one chamber. For example, this bill was passed by the House. It would have to then be also approved by a Senate subcommittee and then a Senate committee to remain eligible. Of course, there's a lot of exceptions to that.
Okay, thank you very much, Katarina Sestaric, and all of our guests, Senator Thomas Green, Representatives John Forbes and Jared Klein, also Jason Karimi, for coming into our State House Law Library studio today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, on the eve of the 10th anniversary of the Varnum decision, we're going to look back at that momentous 2009 decision, unanimous ruling by the Iowa Supreme Court that won the right for same-sex couples to marry here in Iowa. It made Iowa only the third state in the union to legalize same-sex marriage after Massachusetts and Connecticut. We'd like to have your opinion, your view, especially if it changed your life. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Tomorrow on the program, the 10th anniversary of the Varnum decision, which made same-sex marriage in Iowa legal. I'm Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestaric. Thanks for joining us, and tune in again tomorrow.